south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Just thought I'd start with an email that has a lot of salient points in it. Dear Johnny, I'm coming to your next seminar almost definitely. I've sent you emails before, and generally I'm not a procrastinator, but it's definitely time. In fact, the straw has broke the camel's back. I know you've mentioned in past Expat File shows that lots and lots of people want to come to your seminars and become expats eventually, but talk is cheap, and what it really takes most times is the straw that broke the camel's back. We all have our limits, you know, and sometimes it takes more than one straw. A little history now. Over the years, I've had some very, very good business ideas and schemes. In the British sense, you know, if you've ever been to England, when they say scheme, they don't mean anything underhanded or dirty in any way. Just good plans and ideas. Anyway, over the years, I've had great ideas. At least I think so, and I'm a born pessimist. But because I'm up in the States and I'm handcuffed by the rules and regulations, it didn't take me long to talk myself out of those great ideas as they came into my own head. As I thought them out one by one, even before I was able to mention these great brainstorms to anyone close to me, my initial excitement would turn a bit dark and then sometimes to dread, realizing that I just can't pull it off. Up here, these days? Ha! Too many obstacles. Now, it might have been you who mentioned that the United States has hit a landmark. There are more businesses closing every year now than actually opening. So, what does that say about the future? So yes, I repeat, I have had some good business ideas, a lot of them. However, even when I take out a notebook and formulate some ideas, write a little flowchart, and put some numbers together, within 5 minutes, sometimes even 1 or 2 minutes, I start to see all the difficulties and obstacles, and my mind hits a brick wall or two. I'm talking about difficulties and obstacles that weren't there just a few years ago, too. Now, the funny thing is, it's never about the actual idea or the business itself. It's about that tangled web of state, federal, and local government interference. Seems like everybody wants a piece of you, until they've sucked so much blood out of you, you crash and burn. If it isn't the permits or the zoning, there's no end of forms to fill out and other brain-numbing legislation. Then, when I start calculating taxes and insurance and the cost of the startup itself, then come the inevitable labor problems. Workers' rights, FICA, OSHA, workman's comp. I tell you, Johnny, you'd laugh if you saw my notebook. It's just filled with ideas. Goes back 10, even 15 years. And sadly, not one of those ideas ever jumped off the page and became reality. That's not to say you can't start a successful business up here in my neck of the woods. That would be Tennessee. But it seems the only successful ones these days are internet businesses. That way you can start from your home. You don't have to pay big rent. You can even outsource your IT people to India or whatever, so you don't have to pay triple or even four times the rates for local workers. The sad fact is it's all about trying to get around paying the local help, and the only way you can do that is getting on the internet and sourcing out your stuff to another country. I know how sad that sounds, but that's the way it is. In fact, I watched my own brother and sister start two separate businesses from scratch, only to get the first one wiped out after 6 years in a gigantic lawsuit that turned out to be frivolous, and the other business was killed in 2 years because outsourcing in that case made their services obsolete. So with IT, outsourcing can work for you, though with brick-and-mortar businesses, it tends to work against you. In any event, I watched my brother and sister work 80 hours a week consistently for all the years they were in business. People who work for the man all their lives, or people born with silver spoons in their mouths, never seem to realize that. When the business you're trying to build up hits the skids, you just don't walk away like a salaried employee. You've not only lost your job, you've lost all that time you put in. So being a lot younger than my brother and sister, early on they hired me as a gopher and kind of a do-all-the-dirty-work and odd jobs around the place guy. And I watched sadly how their businesses were ground into dust. Not by the marketplace, but by idiots in government that had nothing better to do than to overregulate and bleed their businesses to death. So why am I boring you with all of this? Well, after listening to every one of your Expat File shows and looking at my thick little notebook of unrealized ideas, I really do see now that the so-called American dream has moved south of the border. Just like you're always saying, Johnny. And funny enough, you weren't the first guy I've heard this from. About 20 years ago, my Uncle Woody went down to Latin America. Now, he's not really my uncle. He's my grandfather's much younger brother, so he's kind of like an uncle. Anyway, he's a mining engineer, and about 20 years ago, he went down to Peru and Colombia to work in the gold and the emerald mines. When he first went down, I was a young kid. In fact, I remember him coming back the first few years just at Christmas time, once a year. And my younger sister and I just loved it when he came because he'd do magic tricks. He'd always be able to produce a silver dollar from the back of my ear, and then he'd give it to me. That was my Christmas present. Now, these weren't American silver dollars. They were Colombian silver dollars. They were called reales. In fact, I still have them. Six of them from six different Christmases. So he'd come back to Knoxville once a year on Christmas, and he'd head back down to South America. He'd always tell my mother to send me down during school vacation, and he'd take good care of me, but my mother would never do that. She didn't want me with Uncle Woody in some backwater banana republic. And every year, Uncle Woody would show me pictures of his beautiful young Colombian wife and his two kids. And when he left, my mother would always joke and say, that's probably a setup. It couldn't be his family. It's probably not real. He was a kind of gawky, freckled, toe-headed guy who never had a date in high school. In fact, she said that's how he got the nickname Woody. Woody the Woodpecker. And he was this spitting human image, beak, colic, and all. So who was this beautiful girl and those smart-looking kids? Surely not his. And the fact that he never brought her back once for those Christmas visits kind of sealed it for her. However, another time, my dad told me Uncle Woody said he'd never bring her back because she just wouldn't fit in. He wouldn't want her to, he said. So anyway, Johnny, besides you and your 500 shows, I have an open invitation to visit my Uncle Woody in Peru. Yep, now he's in Peru. Oh, and by the way, I'm in my 30s now, so I'm too old for those magic tricks, and Uncle Woody hasn't been back for Christmas for many years now. And when you ask him why, he says, there's no need. There's nothing for me up there. If you want to see me, you always have an open invitation. And you know what? This time I will. So, Johnny, I'll be taking your seminar first and then a long leg down to Peru. Oh, and Johnny, you'll love this. There's a company in Medellin, Colombia called the Banoro Value Store Company. It's kind of like an upscale pawn shop chain that buys and sells gold and antiques and stuff. They have installed in some of their stores ATM machines that dispense gold and silver bars and coins. That's right, an ATM machine where you can get real gold and silver instantly. Yes, you can use credit card or cash and withdraw between a half a gram to 250 grams of either pure gold or silver directly from these ATMs. And that store chain, the Banoro Value Store, by the way, oro means gold in Spanish. So Banoro means gold bank. And there really is a sign on those ATMs in English that says gold to go. Anyway, with these ATMs, you can select five different languages, and there's a screen and a printout where they give an instant international updated spot price of gold and silver every 60 seconds. Now, of course, I haven't been down to check it out myself, but I certainly will. The last time I talked to my Uncle Woody, about a year ago, he explained the whole thing to me. And he said they've got those ATMs in Peru now, too. Oh, and by the way, on two other Christmas occasions, my Uncle Woody gave me a Peruvian silver escudo. Escudo means shield in English. Oh, and note, these silver coins he gave me are not produced now. They're all dated before 1940. In the meantime, Johnny, see you at the seminar. Sullivan from Tennessee. Well, Sully, great email. Nope, I didn't know about those gold-dispensing ATMs in Colombia. Great idea, huh? Man, I hope that catches on, especially up in the first world, but it'll never last. Now, of course you know every ATM has a camera or two, and you don't want them to take your picture while you're buying gold, that's for sure. That's certainly one way to screw up your anonymity permanently. Which leads me to comment on one of expat Eddie's greatest tricks. Your longtime listeners might remember I mentioned maybe 200 or 300 shows ago how expat Eddie, as well as me and so many other expats who value their privacy, we absolutely abhor surveillance cameras. Unless, of course, we're the ones doing the surveilling. And even though, lag time being as it is down here, there are scant few cameras and probably half of them don't work here in Latin America. However, they are popping up all over the place in high buck areas. And of course, in banks. Also, upscale malls and shopping centers. Yep, it appears they're trying to copy the States by having a camera mounted low on the curb as you enter to catch your license plates. And there's one in your face when you pull the ticket to get the automatic parking gate to lift. Now, I mentioned a while back that you could leave it to expat Eddie to buy a roll of smiley face stickers at a Hallmark store and use them for an unintended purpose. So, if you're in Latin America and you see a smiley face sticker blocking a camera lens, it's expat Eddie's calling card or someone who's copied him. Now, another camera-shy expat friend of mine does something completely different to achieve the same effect. When we were in an upscale mall about 3 or 4 months ago, he showed me how he gets even with camera snoops. He bought a small ice cream cone, and we went into the elevator. He backed up against the wall where the camera was mounted, out of range. And just before the elevator stopped and the door opened, he let the camera have a sticky lick. It was chocolate. So my hat's off to you, expat Frankie. I told you I'd eventually get to talking about it on the show. Now, as far as Sullivan's email, he mentioned he's finally going to take the plunge and come down to my January 2016 Expat Insider Seminar. Once again, it'll be in and around Guatemala, Central America, off the Gringo Tourist Trail. And it's true, you'll get a 2 to 5 year head start on becoming a clued-in expat. Don't take my word for it. Go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's Latin Seminar link at the top of the page. And when you see the sign-up information, you'll note there are 4 or 5 audios to click on from people who've taken previous seminars, and they'll tell you just what it was like for them, including the fact they got a 2 to 5 year head start on being an informed, clued-in expat. And there's a boatload of information to clue you in on. So, to sign up for the seminar, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's Latin American Seminar link. It's on the top of the page. And remember, if you sign up before November 1st, about 3 weeks from now, you'll get that $500 per person discount I promised. Okay, enough said about that. Now, for those of you who've been asking about what happened to the expatwisdom.com website, note I'm no longer affiliated with that site. I didn't own it and thus had no control. And when things were late or the ball was dropped, the owner slash webmaster said he just didn't have time to keep up with it. And there were a lot of things promoted by the webmaster on that website that I did not endorse. So now you'll find my stuff at www.thenewexpat.com, a site that's run by a true boots-on-the-ground expat guy down in Latin America, a personal friend of mine who came to one of my early Expat Insider seminars. So he's experiencing life as a new expat and blogging right here in the thick of it, exactly the kind of guy you need to run an expat website like this. He's right here in Latin America, not up in the first world a continent away. Now, do note, we're changing and updating the site a bit, so it is a work in progress. Do check it out and note the new slideshow that will be going along with every Expat File show. But you know, the real advantage for me moving to the newexpat.com website is that all the blogs, posting, and info there comes from trusted boots-on-the-ground expats like John Galt, the webmaster. So you can follow me and what I'm up to, as well as following the joys and trials and tribulations of new expats like John Galt as they stumble through paradise. And note, if you read through those blogs and postings, you'll see there's a kind of an eccentric yet entertaining edge to quite a lot of them. Why? Well, that's because it seems like everyone who comes down to Latin America as an expat does, in some way, have an adventurous and eccentric edge to them. And a lot of us, including John Galt, Expat Eddie, and myself, wear it like a badge of honor. In fact, if you come down, you'll find out soon enough that the only truly boring expats are those gringos down here stationed at U.S. embassies or on U.S. government contracts. And who gets second place for expat boorishness? Well, it's pretty much a 3 or 4 way neck-and-neck tie between the Peace Corps, Mormon, Habitat for Humanity, and United Nations do-gooders. So, all you do-gooders out there, when many years ago you all cut me off your guest list, I wasn't offended. Though I have to admit, those UN guys are a special case. They really know how to drink, and they know how to bury those expenses on the company charge card. And now, something completely different. For expats here in Latin America, it's a fact of life. Oftentimes, you'll see something crazy happen right before your very eyes, and you'll think to yourself, wow, I thought nothing would surprise me, but now I've seen everything. Believe me, no matter how many times you say that to yourself, tomorrow will bring another crazy surprise. Like what just happened to me about 3 days ago. Driving down the Pan American Highway, you know, the one that goes from Alaska all the way down to the tip of Panama. A big 6-lane concrete superhighway in some sections, and in other sections, stop-and-go traffic, one lane, sometimes turning into dirt for a while. You ought to try it sometime. It's a thrill a minute, but don't do it at night. Anyway, the other day I was driving pretty much due south, right on the El Salvador border, going a respectable 80 clicks an hour, pretty much the speed limit out in the boonies. I'm in the left lane, the passing lane, passing innumerable cars and trucks and pieces of junk. Though once in a while, a bulletproof SUV with blacked-out windows would zoom right past me. Because you see, Latins with money and pompous-ass government officials in SUVs like that think they own the road, you know. Oh, and by the way, chicken bus drivers will often pull the same thing, since they get paid by how many passengers they pick up. So the faster they go, the more dough they make, and as a corollary, the more accidents they cause. I don't have to tell you, you should never play chicken with a chicken bus. So as I'm going down the road, I notice someone pulling up on me quite fast, a pickup truck, probably 20, 25 years old, severely rotted out, side mirror hanging off, front windshield broken, like a massive spider web. And by the way, you'll see a lot of cars down here with broken windshields. A huge fine in the States, in fact, they'll impound your car up there, but down here, even if you get pulled over at a routine stop, the cop won't even mention it. Why? Because cop cars have broken windshields too. Anyway, this beat-up old rusty pickup truck is gonna pass me now. Guess what he's carrying? 9 brand new caskets. And when he did pass, I did get a good look at him because he swerved right in front of me into my lane. They were stacked 4 deep in the open bed, roped with some twine. I mean light twine, the kind you'd wrap a shoebox with. With a big piece of plastic to protect it from the rain, but now it was flapping around like a mainsail on a boat. But the guy driving didn't care. He was in a hurry to get to somebody's funeral, probably his. So I did what I usually do when I see something completely out of the ordinary. I snapped a photo of it. Always a nice touch at my seminar presentation. So anyway, about a half hour later, suddenly there's a bottleneck in the road. That's not unusual. And as I creep along, I realize the guy in the pickup truck was changing his tire and had pulled off to the side of the road just barely. That's what Latins usually do. They almost never get all the way to the side of the road, so they completely bottle up traffic just to change a tire. Owners of disabled vehicles know nothing about roadside courtesy, not down here. So keep that in mind. However, funny enough, every time I've had a flat tire, some car or maybe more than one car will pull over to try to help. And I've been down here long enough to know it's the gringo advantage. I know what the Good Samaritan is thinking because I've been there. I know what they're thinking and I've heard them say it. They're thinking, hey, a gringo, maybe he knows my cousin Julio up in Philly. Yep, Latins are pinheads when it comes to geography, just like first world people. In fact, once at a party, a Latin lady asked me how long it would take to drive from Chicago to New York, where her illegal brother and his family lived. And I said, probably 14 or 15 hours. She went wide-eyed and just couldn't believe it. In fact, when I told her that you could fit about 50 or 60 countries the size of Honduras into the United States mainland, it was obvious she just could not absorb that information. But then again, ask a Cleveland kid to find Turkey on a map and he'll probably head for the refrigerator. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. The guy with the coffin pickup was on the side of the road changing a flat tire. But here's the punchline. About half of those coffins were strewn along the side of the road because it seems the guy blew a tire and the vibration at that speed, he was probably going 90 clicks, shook him right off his junk pickup before he could come to a stop. Surely he missed the funeral and there's gonna be a scratch and dent sale. Oh, and by the way, down here in Latin America, your standard coffin will not fit a strapping 6-foot American type like you or I. In fact, almost everything down here is constructed a little bit smaller to accommodate smaller people. And you'll see that especially in older construction. Doors are smaller, shower heads are lower, look out for those. And note, most older traditional houses, unless they're owned by the wealthy, have noticeably smaller sinks and toilets too. Which reminds me when I first took up the cello when I was a kid in grade school. Till I hit about 16, I had a 3/4 size cello, a cello for kids. So then why not 3/4 size toilets? So be on the lookout for that if you hook up with an immersion family. If you're like me, there's a good chance you'll crack your noggin once in a while and you'll be using thigh muscles you've never used before. Yet another reason, along with the traditional Sunday chicken feet soup, that I could never quite get into that immersion family thing myself. I tried, but my intestines wouldn't last the week. Enough said about that. Let's move on. By the way, just last week, you might have seen on international news, it's been getting a lot of play lately, that there was a big landslide in Guatemala City that killed 200 people and there are around 300 or 400 more missing. Now, the funny thing is, when that kind of bad news hits up in the States, first thing people up in Chicago, Milwaukee, Seattle, and Cleveland are thinking is, oh my God, I know somebody in Latin America. I wonder if they're all right. And sure enough, expats like yours truly get the frantic email and occasional phone call from people we haven't heard from in a long time. Again, it's a matter of faulty or incomplete geography skills. In fact, I just got a call from none other than Captain Mango himself. He told me that one of his aunts up in Cleveland that he hadn't heard from for years was worried that he just might have been sucked into that landslide black hole. So then, what about that landslide you may have heard about? Could that happen to you when you get down here? Definitely not. Expats and gringos live far, far away from neighborhoods like that. We're talking about a large quantity of squatters who over the years have built on land nobody gives a damn about, which is why it's always on a steep side of a hill or a mound. In the States, they're called slums. Down here, they're called asentamientos or favelas. They're not built to any kind of standards. They've got no sewage systems, no zoning, no construction plans. However, somehow, even the poorest of the poor like that get electricity. And believe it or not, though they may have to get their water from the nearest polluted river, they've got that all-important cable TV hookup, so they can watch the progress of Kim Kardashian's butt in Spanish. So anyway, the entire side of a rather large hill, a small mountain, gave way and took the whole subdivision down with it. Now, after the houses fell, another chunk of that mountain fell down and buried everything under 20 to 30 feet of earth. Now, I was in the area recently, so I took a ride down there. And the first thing I noticed was 20 Pizza Hut motorcycle delivery boys going to that site. At first, I was thinking, nice gesture, Pizza Hut, even though that kind of fast food is not fit for man or beast, until I saw that it was the policemen and the firemen who were eating those pizzas, not the homeless survivors standing around in wet blankets, crying as they stared at the place where their houses once stood. And I noticed another thing, all the policemen and firemen and helpers standing around, doing their best with about one shovel for every 10 guys. Seemed like there was no plan, no organization, and everybody just running around willy-nilly, picking through things. Now, in Guatemala, there's an agency called CONRED, C-O-N-R-E-D. It's a bad copy of our brain-dead FEMA agency up north. You remember how well they did with Katrina, right? So they're supposed to be prepared for things like that, floods and earthquakes, but guess what? They didn't have a single simple above-ground listening device, standard equipment for most mines around the world, simply because they have cave-ins. I mean, the point is to hear the survivors digging and scratching under the earth, right? Instead, for the next critical day or two after the accident, the cops and firemen and bystanders were just mulling around like zombies without a brain. Now, as it turns out, and this won't surprise you, the head of that organization and all the immediate supervisors were political appointments, not because they were particularly qualified, had credentials, or were rescue specialists, but because they were politically connected or some politician's brother-in-law. So every night I'd click on the news and watch this thing on TV, and it was a pathetic sight to see. Like a bunch of second graders digging around in a sandbox with play school plastic buckets and shovels. Wouldn't you think a specific government agency would have a plan drawn up well in advance for things like this, since they have landslides all the time down here? And what about those audio detection devices? The ones that arrived way too late. Well, then don't you think you have to keep people away from that site and absolutely quiet? No walking around, no cars or trucks speeding by? Oh, and by the way, first world money is piling in. They'll take that, all right. And who do you think those idiot first world do-gooders and governments are giving it to? The same corrupt government jerks that allowed such a thing to happen. So bottom line, if you come down here, you just might see and hear about such things, but they won't be in your neighborhood. So then what can you do to help? Well, it's easy. Do not donate a dime to any one of these agencies collecting money, or give a handout to any high school or college kid standing at the pump at the gas station with a collection bucket. I'm seeing it myself. Someone tries to hit you up every time you walk into a supermarket or a Walmart. In fact, on last night's local news, they'd captured four guys doing exactly that, dressing up as rescue workers and firemen with hats, collecting money for survivors and pocketing it. So then how do you help these people? Well, there are some shelters and some schools and some churches that are housing some of the survivors. Give those poor people in those places the money or the help directly. Make sure it goes right into their hands personally. And by the way, there's been a conspicuous absence of big organized churches and religions in this disaster effort. You don't see their big shots on the news offering to take in these people. Nope, not the Catholics, not the evangelicals, nor the Mormons, not the various Protestant organizations. Why? Well, because these people who have lost their houses are the poorest of the poor. They've got no cars, no money, no bank accounts. In fact, they've got less than nothing. Not the kind of congregation members most of these churches would like to cultivate or rub elbows with. Such is the hypocrisy of organized religion, huh? Now, that's not to say there aren't certain religious groups helping out these people, but it's on an individual basis. You don't see the big boys, the bishops and the bigwigs coming out saying, we'll open our doors and take in those people. It seems they're just a little bit too short, dark, and poor, I guess. Oh, and by the way, changing gears again, you might remember that a couple weeks ago I mentioned that there's been a hit put out on Donald Trump by narco gang members in Mexico. Again, I'm way ahead of the curve on this because just today, I'm looking at a Yahoo News brief in Spanish right now. I really wonder sometimes if people up in the States are getting this news. Are you? And it says, yes, according to Telesur TV, that's a big Mexican channel, El Chapo, Mexico's richest, now fugitive narco, has increased the bounty on Trump's head to $100 million, dead or alive. I do wonder what Trump's head and hair would look like mounted in Chapo's trophy room. Because that's what he says he wants, his actual head. And like expat Eddie said, what's not to like about a guy who's hated by narcos, 100 million Mexicans, and 20 million illegals up in the States?
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.